we don't really have a strict agenda today, but we want to try to conclude in about 25 minutes or less. And I thought what I'd do is start maybe with Dan and Greg and allow them an opportunity to talk about what they know about the Alabama Forestry Commission and its relationship or lack of relationships with local fire districts and just the whole issue of, you know, from their perspective, what they see, what issues they've seen have developed around the organization of fire districts, because it does occur to us that there might be some overlap in some way, shape, or form between local fire districts and the role that the Alabama Forestry Commission plays in battling wildfires on land. So if that's okay, either Dan or Greg, if you would give us some thoughts that you have about these local fire districts.
Okay. Well, this is Dan Jackson. And let me just, I guess, to give you some background where the Forestry Commission comes in from with this is we have approximately a little over 1,000 volunteer fire departments throughout the state. And, of course, they cover, work with us and cooperate with us on wildfire action. And, but, of course, they do a lot more from structure fires, vehicle fires, vehicle wrecks. A lot of them in the last 10 to 20 years have grown to the extent they're able to handle medical calls now. I can remember earlier in my career, very few volunteer fire departments ran medical calls just because as you can imagine, it's a much bigger liability issue and a lot more training is required and that sort of thing. So we work very closely with the volunteer fire departments across the state, and I think we have a good relationship with them. As you can imagine, that's a handful, though, with 1,000 of them. And they have some groups and organizations that they all belong to. Probably one of the biggest ones is the Alabama Association of Volunteer Fire Departments. It's what we call the AAVFD, and that's probably the one where we work most closely with. And but to, I guess, move from the volunteers to the fire districts is what happens is it starts to leave our, I don't want to say control, but our realm of work. And because what happens, you know, we get a lot of grant money and a lot of the work that we do with volunteers is just in exactly as the name implies. If they're a volunteer department, we're working with them closely. If they become a fire district or a paid fire department, we still work with them, but obviously they have more than likely have a stable revenue source that they can depend on, whether they're funded by a city or a sales tax or ad valorem tax or whatever it might be to allow them to operate. And so we're not as closely attached with those guys because a lot of, I guess, what we do with the volunteers is to help them with funding and legislation, that sort of thing. And where these fire districts have come about, you know, they've kind of gotten a different funding measure and a system set up that allows them to operate and function. And, of course, a lot of them still work with us and respond with wildfires. But,
you know, they're just... Let me ask you about the first part of that that you were discussing. How does the Forestry Commission actually help volunteer fire departments?
Well, one way we do it is they get a small grant. It's supposed to be as much as $2,500 a year, but it's never been fully that amount. Greg, do you remember what this year's was?
This year's, but it started out at $1,702.74, but that was knocked back due to the 12% proration to $1,498.41 per department.
Yeah, so the state, through the Alabama Forestry Commission, gives that grant money to every volunteer fire department. They have to apply for it and meet some general guidelines that allow us to deliver this money to them. And one of the ones that we use quite often, and I guess this is kind of, I don't know if this helps set some of the ground rules, is we call it an 80-20 rule, and that is of the fire department membership, of the firefighters, if 80% of them are volunteer, 20% of them can be paid, and we still consider that a volunteer fire department, and they are still eligible for this grant. There's a few fire departments across the state that they might be in a small municipality, and they may be able to fund having one firefighter on duty, through the day, or sometimes just through the working day.
Let me ask two questions. First, about how do you think most volunteer fire departments take you up on the grant, if you have an idea?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
Greg might even have an actual number, but
all right. It's just a widely used method of funding. It's something that probably every volunteer fire department knows about and participates in, I guess.
Yeah, probably, Greg, what, about 900 and something participate in it?
This year we sent checks to 1,001 volunteer fire departments.
Okay. So our number is actually up a little bit from that. And they use that money for, buying fuel for the trucks, for paying the light bill, for paying for their equipment, their safety equipment they have to use, everything under the sun. Obviously, they're not to be used to have a cookout or a party or anything like that. They have to use it on legitimate cost, and we monitor that, and they have to account for what they spend it on. But I can tell you the cost for fire departments, whether they're volunteer or City of Birmingham or whoever it might be, the equipment that these men and women have to use and operate with is expensive, to say the least. The air packs that you see them wear when they go into buildings, the turnout gear, the bunker gear they have to wear just to protect themselves, that stuff's thousands of dollars right off the bat, and we haven't even gotten into talking about their trucks and that sort of thing. So it's a very, what the state can offer with this grant is just a drop in the bucket, but it's something at least we're trying to help them. And for the smaller departments, it really is a big help to them. And so that's probably one of the biggest ways the state.
Can you give me an example of how the Forestry Commission, whose one of the roles is to battle wildfires, how they would interact with the volunteer fire department when there's a fire?
Well, sure. And right off the bat, we're under budget cuts as well right now, the Forestry Commission is, so we're having to scale back a lot of our operations. But we used to have and still pretty much have an office and a few personnel and some fire suppression units in each county. And that a fire suppression unit to us is a transport truck with a bulldozer on the back of it that a lot of people are familiar with. And while we may have a couple of those in any given county, there may be 20, again, depending on the size, demographics, population, all of that in a county. Fire departments are usually, with 1,000 of them across the state, they are more community-centric, more community-oriented, and are, actually physically located in those communities. And so when a call comes in for a wildfire, they're going to be the first ones to get to it, not the Forestry Commission, especially not now.
Let's start from a typical observation of a fire. Does someone call 911 and then it's routed somewhere?
That's right. Somebody going down the road sees a fire, actual flame, or sometimes just smoke off to the side of the road or whatever. The advent of cell phones has been a great thing, but they'll automatically just about call 911 every time. Every county in the state has 911 service.
And then someone at the dispatch center, do they have a protocol that goes to the volunteer fire department?
Yes, they can. They'll go with it two ways. They either have a system set up to work with their fire departments in that county, and they will page or call out, however that notification process works for that particular department. They'll notify and call the fire department to get them started to it. Then usually they'll turn around and call our central dispatch in Montgomery to make us aware of it, make our county people aware of it. We will. We'll turn around and call our county people, make them aware of it. But usually, by the time that's taking place, most of the time, the volunteer fire department is on their way to the fire.
Okay.
And you're talking about, again, if it's within their community, it's just a few miles normally from a fire station. You're talking about a response time of, oh, gosh, maybe 10 or 15 minutes for a fire department to get up on the scene, and it's going to be 30 minutes or more at best for the Forestry Commission to pull up on the scene. Those are just averages depending on where the fire is, depending on the equipment, the traffic, the bridges, all these kind of things we have to take into consideration. So
let me ask a question related to taxpayer funding of these type of endeavors. I don't know, when was it, 10 or 12 years ago, the voters approved a one, now help me out if I'm off on this, but I believe it was 1 cent per acre. Is that right? 1 cent per acre, let's call it a tax or a fee, whatever, that goes directly to the Forestry Commission for fighting wildfires. Is that still happening now?
Yes, we call that the acreage assessment.
Prior
to that, in fact, David might even remember this, it was not uniform across the state.
Okay. What happens to that money?
It goes to the Forestry Commission, but to give you an example on the cost we're talking about, if you own 40 acres of timberland out there, that 10 cents on the acre equates to $4 a year is what you pay.
Yeah.
For 40 acres of timberland. For us just to crank a truck up and get it a mile down the road, we've probably spent $4 in fuel just doing that.
But what happens to that money? Goes from the taxpayer to the Forestry Commission somehow, and then how is it spent?
We use it to fund our operations, and in the name of fire suppression. I mean, it's not specifically set aside for that, but that it goes into our overall budget to help fund our operations, which primarily equate to fire response in those kind of situations.
Would that include the grants to the volunteer fire department?
No, that comes from the state legislature. They determine the amount that every year when they go into session, they determine the amount that will be funded into that. We are just the conduit, really,
okay.
that funnels that money to the fire departments that choose to participate, and we have to administer it and make sure they play by the rules, that sort of thing.
Okay. I wonder if we could shift to the operation of the fire districts themselves and the same type questions. You sort of answered some of it, and you've mentioned that the purpose of organizing a fire district is to have a more stable source of funding. And do y'all also interact with communities that have a fire district as well in the same way that you would with a volunteer fire department? Or do you have a sort of a situation where it might not be as high on the priority list?
It's probably that. I'm not trying to minimize and all, but because they do have a more stable funding source and usually have better equipment and all that, they are a lot more self-sufficient.
Right.
Might be a better way to think of it at least in our eyes. And, but I mean, you know, I want to say a lot of those, that may not be the right word either, some of those are located around bigger municipalities. I know there are several in Jefferson and Shelby counties. Yeah. You get out into the more rural areas, I don't think there are as many. We don't have, and that's another problem with this, is we don't have hard and fast figures for these fire protection districts because we don't. Our charge is to work with the volunteers, and we do track a lot of their fire data and the number of fires they respond to, how many wildfires they respond to that they work with us on, because there's a lot of fires they go to, the volunteer fire departments go to, that we never know about. I mean, they'll get paged to that. They'll drive up on the scene, and it may be, you know, it may be the size of a you know, a quarter acre or smaller, and they'll put it out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need. Sometimes we're notified and made aware of it, but then a lot of times we're not even informed about it. They've handled it. They've put it out. They've done what we've asked them to do, I guess you could say,
sure.
And we certainly appreciate it. And then they go back to the fire station.
Right. Let me introduce Mr. McCollum, who's a landowner, and Mr. McCollum is taking time to join the conference today. And here's two folks from the Forestry Commission and one from the Southern Group of State Foresters. Mr. McCollum, I wanted to give you an opportunity, if you had any specific questions, to ask them now or make any comments.
At this time, I don't have any comments.
Okay, good.
I appreciate being allowed to listen in. And,
well, we're glad to have you, too. I know we're all learning a lot as we have these discussions and all. David Frederick, you're with an organization that's not just Alabama but other states and all. Did you have anything that you wanted to comment from your perspective about how the Forestry Commission interacts with volunteer fire departments and also these fire districts?
Yeah, I'll make just a couple comments, and I'm actually retired from the Forestry Commission myself and was in Dan Jackson's position previously.
Okay, all right.
I'm familiar with Alabama specifically and other states in the region generally, but all the states in the South work really closely with volunteer fire departments, as Dan has described there. There's actually a program through the U.S. Forest Service, and they provide some funding also for volunteer fire departments. It's money that's appropriated by Congress and comes to the Forestry Commission to be used to in programs that benefit the volunteer fire departments. And I think in the past, at least in Alabama, generally it was used to fund radio communications for the fire departments and training and that sort of thing. So they really didn't get individual grants, but it was used for the benefit of the fire departments. And, Hayes, I know you're an attorney, and I was just trying to look before the call here in the Code of Alabama, and I'm having trouble finding it online. But if you look it up, there's a lot of different ways that that fire departments can be formed in Alabama. It's kind of a mishmash. Some of them are called water and fire protection authorities and all kinds of different ways that fire departments can be formed in Alabama. And then, as Dan said, there's a lot of local funding sources, a lot of different ways, not a lot of funding, but a lot of different ways that funding is obtained by fire departments. You know, some of them may have some sort of an assessment on structure. Some of them get tobacco tax, used to be pretty big. I'm not sure what the status of that is now, but you know, it's local legislation on a county by county basis. Some of them get ad valorem tax,
and this would be even volunteer fire departments as well.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Like Ballin County, for example, they have an ad valorem tax. Ballin is a fast growing county, and their fire department's pretty well funded in Ballin County because of that. And other more rural counties, you know, it's a real struggle.
Right.
So.
Well, and let me add, too, to follow up on what David's saying, Hayes, is, and that's what it takes for these fire departments to operate, is they, I mean, because David, I know, seen it, Greg has seen it, and I have seen it over our careers. I can't begin to tell you how many barbecue dinners I've bought, how many Boston butts I've purchased, in the name of trying to help these guys out to keep their fire departments functioning. And that's a hard, first of all, it takes their time away when they could be training and improving themselves otherwise. They have to take time away from that to do these fundraisers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very precarious way to budget and fund an operation like this. I mean, when you've bought a $200,000 fire truck, they don't care if you've got how many barbecue dinners or whatever you, or whether you're collecting an ad valorem tax or whatever it might be,
mm-hmm.
they want their payment for their truck. And so a lot of these departments have by necessity had to come about to have some kind of stable revenue measures. And the I will say that with the fire protection district, it offers them that, whereas a lot of, and like David was saying, some of the counties still have some tobacco tax and some other smaller funding measures, but the ones that just are living off of donations and fundraisers, that's a tough, you know, it ebbs and flows easily with the economy and the times, and it's a struggle for a lot of them, especially now. So, and even with the ad valorem tax, I realize that can go up and down, but it's a little bit more stable. They can plan with that better. They can go look at purchasing a good fire truck so that the one doesn't break down when they're responding to a fire, or they get up on the scene of a fire and they can't get the pump to prime and to operate efficiently. So
let me play devil's advocate just a little bit and ask some questions about, because I've heard this comment before, when fire districts are organized and for the purpose of stable funding, and of course then they have their own funding mechanism or taxes or fees or whatever you want to call it, for those people that have forest land who are also paying the 1 cent per acre tax to the Forestry Commission, find themselves sort of in a double taxation situation. If a fire district is organized in their area, they may pay more to the fire district than they do ad valorem tax, and then at the same time pay the Forestry Commission. And it's a concern in looking at how these vital services are being funded. It's a concern to them when they maybe feel like they're paying twice. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I'll jump in there, and I mean, I can appreciate a landowner's situation like that, and they're thinking along those lines. I guess one way to think of it is they're getting if they feel like they're paying twice for a service. One of my responses is you're getting double the service. I mean, you have a volunteer, more than likely. You have a, well, in this case, it would be a fire district that's covering them, and you have the Alabama Forestry Commission there to help as well with their forest land.
Right.
So it's not like they're only getting one of those entities to help with wildfire protection on their property. They're actually getting two. But, you know, it's... I'm sure I can see where that could be a concern for some landowners, but again, for the cost, again, it's 10 cents on the forested acre, first of all, is what this acreage assessment is. So again, for 40 acres, it's only $4 a year is what they pay.
Right.
I think that's a bargain, and that's what comes to the Forestry Commission. They're in a fire district, it depends on what the rate is that is set there that's collected. But
typically quite a bit more than that.
I suspect so, but...
For your 40-acre example could...
I think somebody, this is Lee, I think somebody told me that it was $50 a parcel in the Vandiver district, but I'm not sure, and I don't have any other facts other than some landowner told me that.
Well, if it is more for a fire district, they're getting more because, that landowner, if they, I'm assuming possibly, they live on or near the property, that fire district is not just there for fire protection. I mean, if that landowner has a heart attack, the Forestry Commission's not coming, that fire district is. And if he has that landowner is out there, disking a food plot and the tractor turns over on them, the Forestry Commission is not coming. That fire district is. So, I would hope they feel like they are getting what they pay for, but I realize that might be the issue is some of them think it's too much. And again, it is kind of a, that's why we went to this statewide acreage assessment that we talked about a little earlier, so it was more uniform for the Forestry Commission, because we faced that. Some counties had it, some didn't, and we were seeing a big disparity in the our equipment and what we were able, our operations in counties. And so through a vote of the landowners, we were able to pass it statewide. And so to me, it's kind of the same principle with the fire districts. Now, some of them, I think, are enacted by county commissions. Some of them, I think, though, are voted on by the landowners or the citizens in that coverage area of that fire district to be.
Right, voted on by the residents themselves,
right,
typically, and which includes a mix of people, both people who have dwellings,
sure,
and families and live there.
Right.
And then I guess a specific thing that I was drawing attention to was a landowner who has no structure, no apparent need for the services other than a wildfire.
Absentee.
Which he would be paying for to the Forestry Commission and then paying a second time to the fire district. But as you say, if there is added services, it's value added, although I think we had discussed that when you do have a fire district that's organized, there's less need for activity by the Forestry Commission because they have a well-funded organization in place as well. So if there is really, you know, double the benefit, they're paying twice, but they're paying quite a bit more, I think, usually to the fire district.
Well, again, that may be the case, but as I said earlier, probably 9 times out of 10, that fire department is going to be the first one that gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And just because of logistics, it's going to be a lot harder and more time. It's going to take a lot more time for us to get there because we're usually coming from a further distance because we, in most of our counties, we have one base of operation,
right,
whole county, and
having to pull some equipment from who knows where.
And those our trucks, we can't get to high speeds on those things. We don't go down the road with red lights flashing because of the safety factor. So
I wonder if there's any provision, I'm not aware of it, in the acreage assessment that would allow an exemption from the acreage assessment if you're actually in a fire district.
I'm not aware of that. David might, in fact, that acreage assessment might have passed while he was, as he said, in this position years ago.
I'm assuming it's a sort of paint the county red type thing where all parcels of forest land, regardless of where they're located, are assessed the assessment.
I think that's correct, Hayes.
Yeah.
And I think, and Dan and Greg may be able to speak to this better, but I think an assessment on parcels of land by fire departments is probably the exception rather than the rule.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the fire departments may have some sort of assessment on structures, but this is the first time I've heard of one on parcels of land, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that either.
Yeah, this is Lee again. The fellow that brought this up, and unfortunately he's not here this morning, but I'm probably wrong, but I think he told me he was paying $4,000 of fees. And he, you know, on his land, he's got a lot of land. It's all rural land. It's just like my land down in Choctaw County. You know, it doesn't have any humans out there most of the time. So he felt it was really, really a stretch to think he was getting $4,000 of value.
You don't know how much acreage he owned or anything?
It was quite a bit of acreage, but it was charged by the parcel. And so he was, you know, a 5-acre parcel and a 40-acre parcel were paying the same thing.
Well, and that's for a fire district, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference on how these fire districts are set up, how they collect their funds. We have very little connection with that once that starts to occur, just because that's not our, I guess that's not our charge or our, I don't want to say responsibility. I mean, we're more in tune to work with a volunteer fire departments in these fire districts, I guess just by nature of the beast with the funding.
Based on the conversations I had with two other landowners and a third landowner actually as well, they don't feel like they have any input once these things are voted on. And I think that was their biggest complaint, is that these things sort of take on a life of their own, and the landowners and local people have very little voice in management and control of the funds that go to them. And I wish they were here to state the case, but they're not.
Well, I mean, Hayes might could speak to this too, but I mean, they, just by living in a democratic society, they have, I would think they have or had the opportunity for input when this was all voted on, whether it was an outright vote of property owners in a county as to whether they wanted this or not, or whether it was done through the county commission, who, again, if they're a resident there, you know, they vote for that, for county commissioners as well. I don't think very few are done through the legislature. And again, you vote for a state representative or a state senator as well. So I mean, that's probably not a lot of consolation, but that's, again, that's as little as I know probably about how the fire districts come about and come into being and the legislation or the legal authority that sets them up.
Well, it might be something that we hear more and more of as fire districts are organized, and y'all may hear this complaint more and more as time goes on, and certainly they're all providing valuable services.
I've got
it's just a question of, is there any connection at all whatsoever to the services provided and the amount that's charged? And I think that's the rhetorical question I think that many people are asking.
Guy in a row.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
In my particular case, they do charge $100 per year, which is mandatory. Part of that is a fee on the land itself.
Okay, you've got $100 per what, parcel or per?
Per parcel.
Okay. The tax
parcel. If you had 10 parcels, you would owe $1,000.
You'd owe $1,000. Okay. Is there any maximum that you know of on what you're paying?
No.
Okay.
There's no maximum. But lack of input from the individual property owners is non-existent where I am.
You don't think there's
fact,
very
you don't even know
voice,
where
don't
the
even.
Money you pay in goes to. Mm-hmm. How it's used, whether it's used for parties or, like it was earlier mentioned, couldn't happen. But you don't know where it goes. There's a lot of area that is hadn't been addressed by our elected officials in this matter to take protection of the individual property owner's rights.
Mm-hmm.
In this matter,
and when your fire district was, are you in a fire? Is this Mr. McCollum? Are you in a fire district? Is that right?
I'm in one, and it was organized and formed by a gated resort community.
Okay. Did you have an opportunity? Do you live on that property? If I may ask. Okay, so were you given a notice and given an opportunity to vote? Because in some cases, if you're not a voter in that county, maybe you live in the county next door or whatever, and that's very, very common with forest land, you would not have any right whatsoever to vote on your tax.
Right.
Were you in your case, you were given that right when it was organized, or did you buy in?
I knew nothing about it.
Okay.
It was sort of quietly behind the scenes, voted on in that gated community.
Was it organized while you were the landowner of that parcel?
Yeah.
Okay. And you said you were not given any sort of notice about voting, or at least it didn't come to your attention.
Well, there was a legal ad in the paper, but you know,
okay.
Back then, I don't guess anybody reads legal ads but me, but I'd read them now.
Starting to read them now.
I read them now. But there is a large area of concern of the honesty, the and legality that was used in my particular instance. This was done so with a constitutional amendment. And the constitutional amendment, all it said was to allow Tallapoosa County to be divided into five districts and to charge an assessment fee. And when the statute came out later, it gave them authority to levy liens on our property if we don't pay, and to seize that property and sell it at a public auction as if we had a mortgage that we hadn't paid.
So you would actually, if you did not pay the lien, you'd have a lien placed on your property, potentially be some sort of enforcement action?
The enforcement action is sale on the courthouse steps at public auction. It has happened in Tallapoosa County.
Okay.
That's good.
The law that was passed has not been adhered to, not so whatsoever in this county. Maybe this is an exception to the rule. And I don't mean to be hogging time on this, but it's something that needs touching on by people like you and people like in the state legislature. Rather than listening to special interests, they should ask questions from the local people.
Lee, I think you had a comment. Go ahead.
I wanted to get this in before we close out. I'd like to find out, and I think you mentioned it, Dan or Greg, that you don't know where all the fire districts are, which were, you know, the names and the contacts and things like that. Is there a way to develop a list like that? And then the second thing, for our purposes, to be able to talk to the landowners in those districts, what are the zip codes that are affected by those fire districts? And I'd like to acquire that kind of a list.
Well, I said earlier, we don't monitor the fire districts that closely.
Does somebody, do you think?
Go ahead.
Does somebody, some agency in the state monitor them?
Well, Greg, you gotta, we looked into this a little bit, and there's not one point to go to, I don't think, like there is with volunteer fire departments. Probably most of the people out there know if you've got a question about volunteer fire departments, they more than likely will eventually get you sent to the Alabama Forestry Commission, and we'll work from there. But with the fire districts, it's a little bit different area, and I don't know of any kind of governing
body. You know, it's really hard for us to help landowners because there's four or five of them will call us when the CenterPoint thing came up several years ago. We had some really angry landowners up there. And now the Vandiver thing came up, and some really angry landowners contacted us about that. But there's just a few, you know, forest landowners in each one of these, and maybe if we could get them all organized across the state, they could have a voice. But right now they have really, and just like Mr. McCollum said, he doesn't feel like he has any input in this at all.
We've been totally left out.
Well, again, it's probably small consolation. The only thing I can offer you to at least inquire, Mr. McCollum, in your case, to find out more about the legalities of how they function and that sort of thing, is I would think you should have the right to either ask your county commission or your state legislator, do they know about this fire district? Can they help you understand how they formed, you know, most of these, especially if it's collecting any kind of a fee and all, I would think they would have to have public records as far as how they were, you know, incorporated and bylaws and those sort of things. And but sometimes those can be challenging to get, I think, but I think the bottom line is especially if you, your property or you live in the area that they cover and they're collecting these fees on, I would think you should have the right to look at that information to see how they form, how they function. You know, do they have a board of directors? Just all those kind of things of how they're set up and how they operate.
Here's also one suggestion along those lines. For those people that live in the fire district, they can run for, you don't have to be a fireman, I don't think, to be on the board as far, I mean, there are probably rules in each situation. However, many, and probably the majority of people that own forest land don't live in that fire district, and so they would not, both, they were not able to vote on the fee, and they're not able to serve on the board. They are literally in every way, shape, and form shut out of the process because of the way it's set up. And so this draws unwanted negative attention to that acreage assessment, which they are paying, and probably most people are happy to pay. But then at the same time, they're part of a process that they have absolutely no control and no voice over. Even when it was first established, much less buying into that fire district. They may have been a property owner, as Mr. McCollum was, at the time it was organized.
Right.
And he is in a situation where he actually was a voter, but many people aren't. But, I think we've just about run out of time. It might be something that some of the guests wanted to say that they did not get to say. This would be a good time to do that. I'm sure I've cut somebody off, or we've bypassed a topic that you think, you know, really needs to be addressed or discussed. I'll just open it up. Does anyone have any final comments before we close out? That's great. That's great. I really appreciate Dan, Greg, David, Mr. McCollum, all of you taking time out of your busy days to participate in this. I've learned a lot. And I think it helps us understand the process a little more, and what the responsibilities are in these various roles. So it's been enlightening for all of us, I think, and we really do appreciate y'all taking time out of your day to participate.